Our next item on the agenda, number four, is noted as being withdrawn. Our next public hearing is subdivision number 2009-10 HP Layton Partnership.
Is anyone going to do it? May reapply later. Subdivision number 2009-10 is the application of HP Layton Partnership. It's an application to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, dividing 52.97 acres into 49 lots. Also requesting a variance from the maximum allowed cul-de-sac length of 1,000 feet and being located west of Round Pole Bridge Road, also known as Road 257, 1,050 feet north of Cave Neck Road, also referred to as Road 88. Again, for the record, the applicants on August 17th provided a spiral-bound exhibit booklet, which includes a site data information sheet, a listing of contact representatives, a report on site information, references to water service, sanitary sewer service, and stormwater management, and appendices of documents referencing compliance with Section 99-9C of the Subdivision Code, technical advisory committee comments, utility commitment letters, wetland information, DLDOT comments, a summary of endangered species and natural heritage assessments, addressing comments, and a preliminary site plan. And with that, I will refer to Mr. Abbott for any additional comments that have been received to date.
Mr. Chairman, the technical advisory committee review of December 29th is part of the record. It's been in the file. It's also in the exhibit booklet. On August 24th of 2009, we received a letter of no objection from DLDOT for the entrance location only. On Monday, the Nature Conservancy sent a four-page letter. We provided the commission and Mr. Robertson a copy of that letter on Monday. That's a part of the record. And then today we received comments from the county's historic preservation planner and comments from State Historic Preservation Office, and they will be made a part of the record. That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, sir, we thank you. Chair recognizes Mr. Fuquay.
Good evening, gentlemen. For the record, my name is Jim Fuquay. I'm an attorney in Georgetown. I represent the applicant, which is the HP Layton Partnership. With me seated right back here is Sam Burke and his son Lawrence Burke. They are members and represent the applicant. Gary Couples is seated on this side. He's from ECI. They're the engineers for the development and site designers. And also with us is Ed Linnae with Environmental Resources. And Mr. Linnae did the wetland delineation. There was an exhibit book that was submitted for the record, which I assume you gentlemen have. I also have some supplemental information, which I would like to submit. What it's comprised of are copies of the exhibit boards that we'll be using tonight. There's a replacement page for the table of contents and page one of the Section 99-9C summary. There was a traffic planning and design study that was received just this week. And then we also had some photos taken of the site, basically showing what we'll be getting to, but some of the brickyard ruins that are located on the site.
Mr. Fuquay, I'm going to ask our counsel, if you would show Mr. Robertson what it is you want to submit. I have some concern that since it hasn't been in the file, appears to be some new information, public hasn't had the benefit of seeing it. And Mr. Couples, if you would be kind enough to, I'm sorry, do you have boards?
Yeah, we have double boards.
Okay, good. Ladies and gentlemen, they're awfully hard to see from where you're sitting. Please feel free to get up, come up, walk up, take a look. I would appreciate if you wouldn't have a meeting while you're up there, but you know, by all means, anyone who wishes to take a closer look, please feel free to get up and do so.
Bear with me, gentlemen, for a second.
That's fine. Go ahead. Mr. Abbott, are there copies of the site plan?
Just what we had left from after we sent it out to the technical advisory committee.
Okay. Well, I think Johnson and Mr. Burton might want to share one, I think.
Go ahead, Brian. Just keep it in front of you, and we'll look off here.
Yeah, it's the same thing that's on the board. I just wanted to make sure the public could see.
Mr. Chairman, for the benefit of the folks in the public, it looks like what's been submitted is I think you said the 99-9C. Is that correct, a typo?
It corrected some, it was okay. A mistake on there.
Yeah, because that's already in the booklet. It's site plan information, which is in the file, and just a blow-up of what's in the comp plan, so that's available to the public. And then photographs of the site, and historically the commission's allowed photographs to be in, because they just record what's, there. The one, I guess the question I have is there's a traffic planning and design, Inc. report dated all today. I mean, I obviously just got it today. Is there any reason why that came in today and not 10 days ago, or?
We just got it. That's all I can represent. If you want to exclude that, we can.
It's up to the commission. Ultimately, the commission has the discretion. The other ones I'm fine with. So.
I think might be appropriate to go ahead and let us take a look at it. I'm going to make a copy of that available right here to anybody that wants to come up and take a look at it. Mr. Tyler, if you want to take a look at it, or any of the other folks who might have an interest in it. I don't think there's anything.
I have an extra copy, which I can.
Okay, great. If you would without prejudice, hand it to somebody. There you go.
What are the implications of the traffic?
I didn't read the whole thing. It looks like this firm, Traffic Planning and Design, Inc., did a traffic volume review, and I suppose this is a summary of it. So, and that wasn't included in the original booklet that was submitted on time.
Was that at the request of DelDOT? Or?
That's what I don't know. That's what I was wondering.
That was just generated by the applicant.
Well, like I said, the commission has the discretion to allow it in. I mean, there's the rule that it's 10 days, but under that rule, it's up to the commission, and certainly the commission could give it whatever value it wanted to give it as part of the record as well.
My only concern, Mr. Chairman, is that without the 10 days obligation being met, the public doesn't have a chance to get expert testimony to rebut, and that's an important part of the process, and I don't want to jeopardize the application one way or the other, regardless of the decision.
All right, then anyone else like to comment on the admissibility of the traffic impact information?
Is there of any significance that related to that traffic impact?
Well, I'm not going to describe what
it is. That's the catch 22, Mr. Johnson. That's what.
Mr. Chairman, I would represent that we'll just withdraw that.
Okay.
I'll just make a general statement that with a 49-lot subdivision, minimal traffic impact is expected. Mr. Ross, I would point out, and I understand the 10-day rule, but it puts the applicant sometimes in a difficult position because, for instance, we received letters from the state or the county historical planner and the state agency today, and we don't have a whole lot of time to respond to that either, but anyway, that's fine. It's a 49 lot subdivision.
Nothing would prevent Mr. Fuquay from sharing the contents of that report in your presentation. I mean, in your comments, if you wish to read from it, talk about it, that's your privilege. But I don't think we can accept the exhibit because of the 10-day rule, but you're welcome to talk about it.
Okay, if they're in there and they can be deleted or just...
Oh, it's fine. We'll just disregard it.
Okay.
We'll have it stricken from the record and deleted from those packages.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, sir. Go ahead.
Okay, this is a standard lot subdivision application for a 49-lot single-family subdivision to be called Brickyard Landing. The site contains 52.97 acres. It's located on the west side of Round Pole Bridge Road, which is County Road 257. It's about 1,700 feet north of the intersection of Round Pole Bridge Road and Cave Neck Road, located just east of Milton. There is an area map. Just an area map, again, showing the town of Milton. Coming out Cave Neck Road, the site is right here. Off of Cave Neck Road is the Cave Colony development, and the development that was approved next to that. And basically, that shows everything within a two-mile radius. So again, the site's just located just east of Milton. The site it is basically wooded. There's been some timber that has been harvested from the site. The development plan is to preserve as much woodlands as possible. And that basically would be the woodlands that are not necessary to be removed for the road construction and home construction. The site contains 8.92 acres of wetlands. That's comprised of both state and federal Section 404 wetlands. The wetlands are basically located along the Broadkill River on the north end of the site. They extend from the river along the eastern boundary of the site down to the road. Then there's a second area of wetlands that are located along the southern portion of the site on its northern boundary right here. And basically it's the area shown in green there. A wetland delineation was performed by Ed Linnae. That has been completed. That has been submitted to the Army Corps of Engineers for jurisdictional determination, and we are waiting for a finalization of that review. As Mr. Abbott stated, in the file there was a letter received from the Nature Conservancy requesting that the Commission require this application to be submitted to the PLUS process. Under the state law, this application is not required to go through the pre-application review process by statute. As you know, the statute has specific criteria for what goes to PLUS. This did not go to PLUS because it wasn't required to go to PLUS. I think it would be generally agreed that we know from experience that if this had been reviewed by PLUS, DENREC would have stated that they would prefer to see a minimum of 100-foot buffer from wetlands. And in the Nature Conservancy letter, they state that, in their opinion, the 100-foot buffer is the minimum that should be required, and a 300-foot buffer is preferable. Now, as you know from past experience, I tend to become a little bit agitated when the subject of wetland buffers comes up. Perhaps I'm just getting older and I'm just getting irritable, but it's something that obviously causes me agitation. And the reason for that is because there is no requirement for a 100-foot buffer, and there certainly isn't any requirement for 300-foot buffers. The required wetland buffers that are provided by law is, number one, by Sussex County, there is a 50-foot buffer required from state-defined wetlands and streams. That buffer is not required from federal wetlands. From the federal government through the Army Corps of Engineers, there are no required buffers. Section 404 of the Clean Water Act prohibits the filling of federal wetlands without obtaining an appropriate permit. And under the state of Delaware DNREC requirements, despite the fact that they continually recommend this buffer, and DENREC has the authority to issue regulations that would require this buffer, there is no buffer required. There's never been a DENREC regulation requiring buffers. So basically, the way I view it is, in designing a development, we're required to provide what the ordinances and the statutes require. It's no different than if I'm driving down the road coming from Milford to Georgetown doing 50 miles an hour, and I know the speed limit's 50 miles an hour, and I go by a sign that says the speed limit's 50 miles an hour. If I'm stopped by a state police officer who says, do you know that DLDOT and the Highway Safety Council recommends you should be doing 35 miles an hour, I'd say, well, I'm doing the speed limit. I'm not required to do what somebody else thinks it should be. It's the same situation. I think that's the source of my irritability at times. Now, that being said, the buffers often are somewhat site-driven, and based on the shape of this parcel, and based on the fact that it's a limited number of lots, 49 lots are being requested, this site design provides a minimum, and in most places it's more than this, but it provides a minimum 50-foot buffer from the state-defined wetlands boundary. Now, that is required by Sussex County ordinance. Now, in addition to that required buffer, there is a minimum, and again, in places it's greater than this, but there's a minimum 50-foot buffer from the federal Section 404 wetland boundary line. Now, that buffer is the buffer that's not required. That's being voluntarily imposed, created, designed by the applicant. Now, these buffers are, as I said, they're the minimum. They are buffers between the wetland boundaries and the lot boundaries. So in other words, these buffers are not located, these buffers are located outside of the lot lines. They're not on the lots. And these buffers will remain as undisturbed areas. So the buffers that are basically being provided not only meet the wetland requirement, buffer requirements, but they exceed any of the existing requirements. As you'll note, the name of the proposed subdivision, Brickyard Landing, refers to the historical use of the site, which was a brick manufacturing facility in the 19th and early 20th centuries. Basically, clay was dug from pits that were located on the property as well as on adjacent properties, and that clay was used to produce bricks. Those bricks presumably were shipped by roadway to sites. At one time, the bricks were shipped by water on the Broadkill River, which was the derivation of the name Brickyard Landing. And also, as I understand it, they were shipped by train, which at one time had access to the site. Ruins of some of those buildings that were used in the operation still exist on the site. That was one of the supplemental exhibits that we submitted showing some of the photographs of those buildings. Those buildings, again, buildings are not the correct word. They're really ruins. They're deteriorated, roofs have collapsed, things of that nature. The two main structures or ruins that are located on the site appear to have been offices. And then also there is a another area where there is what was an old oven or kiln, which is where the bricks were baked. Now, that historical use of the site was not something that was unknown to Mr. Burke and Lawrence. Sam's wife's, I believe it was her grandfather, Sandreth Layton, who I think is Lawrence's great-grandfather, actually purchased the property in 1932. And from the deed records, in 1931, the Laughlin Brick Company was declared bankrupt. Mr. Layton purchased the property in a court-ordered bankruptcy sale at that time. And to the best of our knowledge, the brick business ceased with that bankruptcy or sometime before that bankruptcy. But the site didn't operate as a brickyard after that sale. Since the purchase of the property by Mr. Layton, and that's basically the past 78 years, the property and all the remnants of the brick operation have been owned by the heirs of Mr. Layton, which is now the applicant, H.P. Layton Partnership. So basically, it's been in the family for that 78-year period. As Mr. Couples will explain when he reviews the site plan, the two main ruins, which were the offices, or the two buildings, office, whatever they were, in planning the site, they were located in a community open space area. So the intent in designing the site was to preserve those two sites, to take measures to make the ruins safe so that no one, you know, would be injured or suffer any type of harm from it, and to preserve them and basically protect them, place appropriate fencing around them to block any type of access to the sites, but to preserve them for the historical significance of them and also for future archaeological study, if that was deemed appropriate by anyone interested. Now, as Shane stated, today letters were received by the Planning and Zoning Office from the State of Delaware Historical and Cultural Affairs Office and from the Sussex County Historic Preservation Planner regarding the historical significance of the brickyard operation, which, as I said, was not something we were not aware of and something that we were already addressing. But in response to those letters, the applicant, the Burks, are agreeable to allowing the appropriate county or state agency to access the site for a reasonable period of time to perform such studies or surveys or excavations and documentation as they deem appropriate. And really the only condition on that would be that the access would be on prior notice to the Burks, and that whoever does it would basically provide proof of liability insurance naming the applicant as an insured, which are certainly reasonable conditions. So as far as a historical study of the site, we're certainly willing to work with whatever agency would be interested in doing that. Now, as to the subdivision itself, a sewer for the development will be a central wastewater system that will be operated by Tidewater Environmental Systems. The system would contain a collection mains. There would be a pump station meeting the county engineer requirements, and wastewater basically would be pumped to and treated as part of the Milton wastewater system, which is operated by Tidewater. Water would be on individual on-site wells that would comply with DENREC regulations. Streets would be private. They would be built to Sussex County standards, and they'd be maintained by the Homeowners Association. There's one entrance to the subdivision, and that's from Round Pole Bridge Road. Entrance is located right here. This is the intersection right here with Cave Neck Road. As was stated, there is a letter in the record from DelDOT, a letter of no objection as to the entrance and its location. Lynn and Linda Rogers are present here tonight. They and part of their family own and live on the property, which is located just west of this site. And their property is actually accessed by a prescriptive right-of-way that goes over this site to get to their property. And it's located right here. This is the Rogers property here. Now, the proposed subdivision entrance is located where the existing right-of-way is currently located. So the proposed entrance road will provide access to the Rogers easement and then across that easement onto their land. Nothing will be constructed that would interfere with the access for vehicles or farm equipment to the Rogers property to any extent that would be less than what they currently have. And in fact, we couldn't do that, and there's no intention of doing that. So that access certainly will be maintained and provided. The site itself is located in the Henlopen School District. It's within the coverage area of the Milton Volunteer Fire Company, and shopping and services are located nearby in the town of Milton. Utilities would be provided by Delaware Electric Co-op for electric, Verizon, telephone, and MediaCom for cable TV. All the lot owners in the subdivision would be required to be members of a homeowners association that would be responsible for enforcing the restrictions, collecting assessments, and maintaining the roads and the common areas. As to the applicable land use laws, under the state strategies map, which, as you know, is a state spending plan, this land, from my review of it, appears to be located in three different levels. It's in a level 4, a level 3, and a level 2 area. Under the Sussex County zoning ordinance, the land is zoned AR1, agricultural residential. Single-family homes on individual lots are one of the purposes of the AR1 zone, and single-family homes on individual lots are one of the permitted uses in the AR1 zone. And as you know, the AR1 zone, in terms of density, permits approximately 2 lots per acre. This proposed subdivision of 49 lots on 52.97 acres is a density of approximately 0.9 lots per acre, or less than 1 lot per acre. And just to complete that analysis, even if all of the wetlands were deducted from the gross acreage, that's approximately 9 acres from the 53, even if that were done, the net density would still be approximately 1.1 lots per acre, which is significantly less than the density permitted by the existing zoning. And lastly, and most importantly, under the 2008 Sussex County Comprehensive Plan, the site is located in what is designated as the Milton Town Center District. And again, the town of Milton is the dark color, the municipality. The town center is the beige color, which surrounds Milton. Our site is highlighted in blue here, again, within the boundaries of the town center district. The town center district is one of the designated growth areas identified in the plan. And from the state and county point of view, I would suggest that they deem it the most appropriate growth area in the plan for development. The plan states that significant growth is proposed around incorporated municipalities in unincorporated areas just beyond the municipal boundaries, which certainly describes this site. And the plan also recognizes that actually permitted uses in the town centers include a range of housing types, not only single family that we're proposing, but also townhouses and multifamily units, which again, we're not proposing. This is a straight standard 49 lot subdivision. With that, what I'd like to do is turn our presentation over to Gary Couples, who's going to basically review the site plan.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Gary Couples. I'm the president of ECI. I'm a registered professional land surveyor in Delaware and a professional planner. Mr. Fuqua, as usual, has done a great job of explaining my plan, but seeing that we're trying to establish a record, I want to go through my notes so that I don't miss anything and that it's made abundantly clear to you. The total site acreage is 52.97 acres. It's comprised of six tax parcels to include a previously approved subdivision that was approved by Planning and Zoning on March 19th, 2008. If this plan here is approved, then the previous subdivision would be vacated. That plan is on red. You'll have a, you have a smaller exhibit, and that plan included the development of four lots, one, two, three, four lots, and a cul-de-sac street that ran along the northern portion of the site. And that was approved March of 2008, as I had said, March 19th.
Can I ask a quick question just for the record? Was that one that followed a public hearing, or was that, because it looks like those lots, and I don't remember, but it looks like those lots were on a county road, so I couldn't.
Well, the lots are on a county road, with the exception that there is a long access here to a lot back here
okay.
on the river.
Okay.
Okay?
So it was another business item. It didn't follow a public hearing. Okay.
Could
I just wanted
well
to make sure.
Have,
Okay.
The location, as Mr. Fuqua has said, it's on the west side of Round Pole Bridge Road, approximately a quarter of a mile north of the intersection of Cave Neck Road. The prior land use was a brick plant till its closure in 1928. And as Mr. Fuqua has explained, there are numerous pits and mines on the plan. And if you look at the topography on the plan, you'll see along the east side of the proposed road that there are indentations all along this area here. They were basically areas where they scraped clay out, and these areas here that are in blue on the plan were clay pits. There were also large clay pits, as you can see here across the street, and at other locations off-site. So this was a relatively large facility. It appears that the majority of the brick manufacturing was on this site and perhaps on the property to the west in this area here. Matter of fact, the letter that you just received today from the state historical office talks about some dwellings that they were that were associated with that plant, and we looked at the aerial photography date from 1937 up through 2002. The 1937 photography through 1997 shows some sort of a complex in here, that there was a lot of buildings in here. In 2002, those buildings disappeared. I don't know what occurred to those buildings, but I can tell you that the buildings on our site are still there, and we have provided photography with along that line. The current use of the site is it's 100% wooded. We, looking at the aerial photography, we look for some clearings. There really and truly isn't. So it is a wooded terrain, secondary growth. It's rolling terrain, and as I said in our report, scattered ruins of the brickyard and the clay mines. The wetlands, Mr. Fuqua tried to address the wetlands, and I'm going to try to do a little bit clearer rendition of the wetlands, and should we need to, I suspect we could always ask Mr. Lene to fill in the blanks if you have other questions. We have state wetlands, and those the state wetlands come from aerial photography. The planners at the state
obtained aerial photography, analyzed that aerial photography, and determined where they thought coastal wetlands were. They might be freshwater, they might be saltwater, but they did that. And those wetlands are shown on our plan as the dark green. The federal wetlands, what you would think would coincide with the state land, in fact, don't. The federal wetlands are more aggressive, and they are showed in the light green throughout the site. So when we go for a jurisdictional delineation from the United States Army Corps of Engineers, Corps of Engineers doesn't care about the state land wetlands. They care about their wetlands, the federal 404. In that the federal wetlands are more aggressive uniformly across this site, we elected to use the federal 404 wetland line as the beginning of our buffer. So in some cases, where the state wetland line and the federal wetland coincide, which is only in one area, we have a 50-foot buffer. But in other areas, we have a 115-foot buffer from the state wetlands. The requirement in Sussex County is 50 feet from the state wetland line. Now then, there's also a distance from the wetland line, the 404 line, to the building envelope, which is represented here. The building envelopes are in this tan color. And that isolation distance from the 404 wetland line averages about 111 feet. So these lots are pretty well buffered from those wetlands. In terms of site layout, it's a conventional AR1 subdivision with off-site sewage disposal, as Mr. Fuquay has stated. The project will be served with conventional gravity sewers that will drain to a pump station, Ordinance 38, and thence on its way to the Milton Wastewater Treatment Plant, which was just upgraded. Total lots is 49. Cul-de-sac length was a waiver that was requested. And I want to talk about that cul-de-sac length. The previous cul-de-sac that was approved by the Planning Commission had a length of 2,535 feet. The cul-de-sac length that we're proposing has a length of 2,352 feet. So our cul-de-sac length is short, but we're maintaining that the length of cul-de-sac is not that different. And the reason we say that is that we have provided access points along this road, this north-south road, to effectively provide from this intersection to this point is 600 feet. From this intersection to this intersection is another 600 feet. From this intersection to this intersection is 580, and then from this intersection to the center of the cul-de-sac is 570 feet. The reason we provided these is to provide access to future subdivisions should it happen, and to provide turnarounds for emergency vehicles or whatever. In the case of this here, we don't have that issue. We have a street intersection already developed. The entrance to the project will be served by a boulevard with two
16-foot lanes. Currently, the access to the Rogers property is via a 10 to 12-foot gravel driveway. So we're going to improve that, and in conjunction with the two 16-foot lanes that makes up the whole boulevard here, there's also a 6-foot mountable island. So there will be no restriction of farm equipment, et cetera, to get back to that site at all. Sidewalks are planned on one side, as shown on the site plan, and they are connected to the various amenities made a part of the project. Streetlights, yes, we anticipate that there will be streetlights. Just tentatively, we think that there will be 8 streetlights. There'll be one here at the intersection, at this intersection here, 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 and here, in areas that would require street lighting. As far as the school bus stop, we're going to coordinate that with the school district. As you know, the school buses do not like to traverse private roads. As far as forest preservation, the site is 100% wooded with secondary growth. Some of it is of relatively decent quality. As it stands right now, the woods to remain are estimated to be 70%. The tree removal will only be allowed to facilitate construction or positive drainage on the lots, as well as the construction of the roads and any stormwater facilities. The plan, as it proposed, has 22.5 acres of open space, or roughly 43% of the site area. In terms of site buffers, we have a 30-foot site buffer along the property to the west. We have a site buffer here from the Broadkill River that is about 300 feet. Down in the area to the south, we again have a 30-foot site buffer, and in other areas have a 130-foot site buffer to the boundary line in this area here. Here we have a 30-foot forested buffer, which just happens to coincide with the old roadbed for the Queen Anne Railroad. As Mr. Fuquay indicated, the access to the Rogers property will not change. It will continue via an existing 20-foot prescriptive right-of-way for farm and 3 residential structures. That's part of the legal documentation. Now we're going to get down to the reason why we got a traffic study and why we got it today. Last year, Sam Burke wrote a check to DelDOT in the amount of $2,700. A copy of that check is in the packet. That was to fund an area-wide traffic study. Well, they took the money and they didn't do the study. So we didn't have much choice. We ended up doing a traffic study to support our position that there is no impact to the surrounding traffic. At the end of the day, when one looks at traffic, what you're looking at is what happens at intersections. You're looking at the intersection here, for example, at Round Pole Bridge Road and Cave Neck Road. That would be of concern. The other intersection would be Round Pole Bridge Road's intersection with Hudson Road. The traffic study that we commissioned based upon the counts that are publicly available from DelDOT indicates the level of service at those intersections does not change at all. Level of service at the intersection of Cave Neck and Round Pole Bridge Road is, in a no-build scenario, right now, it operates at a level A and a level B. After the build-out, it'll operate at a level A and a level B. The same situation exists at Hudson Road. It operates A and B right now, and it will continue after the development of the project at an A and a B. So that's why we incorporated a traffic study. We felt like DLDOT didn't hold up their end of the bargain. We went ahead, we stood up and did it ourselves. It's not nearly as in-depth as perhaps you would get from DLDOT, but it is accurate and is based upon their information. So that's why you have that. Along with the traffic study, in the booklet, you will find a letter of no objection for the entrance. DLDOT has reviewed our application, has issued that letter for the entrance. So hopefully that puts the issue of entrance and traffic to bed. Someday, perhaps, or maybe we should ask for our money back.
Good luck with that.
Chances of that are slim and none, isn't it? But that's quite simply, DLDOT didn't do what they said they were going to do. Surprise. The community highlights is that it is a wooded area with restricted clearing. They're all going to be wooded lots. Be a lot of open space, 43%. We're having quite a bit of community common open space. We'll have a tot lot that is planned for right here, and we're anticipating the development of a crab and fishing pier on the Broadkill River. We feel that we can permit that quite readily and provide some site amenities. After all, it is 49 lots. I've addressed the issue with sanitary sewer. As far as potable water supply, it will be via on-lot wells. Now then, in the letter that you received from the Heritage Commission, there was some discussion of endangered species. In our booklet, it is specifically Appendix F. You will find that we have letters from the state as well as Federal Fish and Wildlife that there are none. They mention a woodpecker, they mention a buzzard, and they mention a butterfly. All of those species are relatively not common to Delaware and are listed as a G5, so that means there's no global shortage of those species. And that's very clearly delineated in that letter. Those letters, like I said, are back in the Appendix F. State planning issues, Mr. Fuquay has addressed that as to where it is. As far as the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan, we have an exhibit that shows that it is town center. Plus comments, there are none. I guess it's probably a bit of a disappointment because we didn't get an opportunity to write back. But we do have in the Appendix A our responses to Sussex County 99-9C. I could go through there and read them. I don't think you guys want to sit through that tonight. But if you do, I'll be happy to do it.
It's part of the record.
It's part of the record. Stormwater management for this site, because it drains to a tidal body, there is no requirement for quantity. There is a requirement, however, for quality. We intend to provide water quality treatment by the utilization of bioswales and other green technology to include biologs and try to get away from the silt fence where we feel that the biologs do a much better job. The runoff will be calculated and developed utilizing the Durham model, which is the model that is most accepted by the Sussex County Conservation District for areas that drain to tidal bodies, water bodies. The historic significance of the site is that you have letters that you just received today. What they didn't tell you is that the state had a couple of archaeologists out there. And I'm also led to believe they also had an anthropologist there. They got sick. Well, they didn't get real sick from, like, being on site. They got chiggers and poison ivy. So they were unable to complete their reports, but they're certainly welcome to. But it was nice because when I went out there to take the pictures, I didn't have to worry about the chiggers because I knew enough to go home and take a shower right away. We've talked about the historical photography. And just to give you a brief site history from what we've been able to find out, the brick company, according to the Milton Historical Society, was established in September of 1887 as the Milton Brick Manufacturing Company. That's what they have a record. It was closed in 1928. Mr. Fuquay has indicated they went bankrupt in 1931. The site may have, although there's nothing conclusive in the files in Milton, that it may have been part of the Laughlin Brickyard. And they say that location of that brickyard, they haven't been able to distinguish. So that's what we were able to pick up by going to Milton, because they were the closest historical society. So with that, I think I've concluded what I have to say.
All right.
And gentlemen, I think we've said a lot, so I'm not going to prolong this. I just want to add that I did prepare proposed findings and conditions for your consideration, which goes to Mr. Lank.
Doesn't matter, whichever, Mr. Lank or me.
Thank you, sir.
We would ask you to consider the Mr. Couples mentioned that we did address the Section 99.9C provisions of the subdivision ordinance, and that's in the exhibit book that we submitted. And in conclusion, the Brickyard Landing application, it's a low-density residential development, less than one lot per acre. It'll be served by public sewer. It was designed in an environmentally sensitive manner. As I said, we will make arrangements if the county or state are so inclined to study the site. I would say that representation I'm making is in the conditions that I've submitted to you, and we're again amenable to that being a condition of approval at our suggestion. The site is located in the town center area under the comp plan. It's a growth area, and as I said, it's probably the most preferred growth area. Obviously, we're going to be taking questions, and we have people here to speak regarding the application, but we do believe and hope to request your approval based on the record that's been submitted, and again, we'll try to answer any questions you might have, and that would conclude our presentation.
All right, sir, we thank you. You'll stand by for a second. I imagine there might be one or two questions, and we'll start with Mr. Burton.
Okay. Really a question for you, Vince. This letter in recommending that this app go to Plus, is that something we can do, have done?
You mean as far as sending something through the Plus process?
As far as us requesting it.
Yeah. I mean, the statute, I went back and looked at this after getting that letter. The statute requires certain plans to go through Plus, like Mr. Fuquay says. I mean, it says, you know, I think at RPCs over 50, certain commercial things, environmentally sensitive, developing area projects, that type of thing. At the same time, it also talks about that the county can refer matters to Plus if they want to. And it certainly doesn't prohibit the referral of a project to Plus if that's what you wanted to do. I don't know whether the county's done that before, sort of, you know, at its own discretion on an application, but I don't see that there's a prohibition in doing that.
I don't know of any subdivision that's been submitted except by the applicant. And in some cases, less than 50, but it was their choice to get the information from Plus. I know there's been some probably conditional use at just a few that were referred to go to Plus.
Right.
But I have to go back and figure out which ones they were. It's been quite a while since we even did it.
The referral of, you know, things before the county to Plus, I mean, that shows up, it's referenced in the statute, it's referenced in the memoranda of understanding between the county and the state, you know, so there's some pretext for doing that.
If I could just add, I mean, I reviewed that too, and the state statute that sets this up, remember, this is the pre-land use application, not the after-hearing application process. As I said, there's nothing in there that covers it. There's two things in the statute that maybe you could view as a gray area. One is that any project that is required to go to the state for pre-application review by the local jurisdiction's regulations, and there is no local Sussex County regulation requiring something like this to go to that. And the other one is any local land use regulation, ordinance, or requirement referred to the State Planning Coordination Office by the local jurisdiction for advisory comments. But that's referring to local land use regulations, ordinances, or requirements. So that would be laws proposed by the county that they're voluntarily sending to PLUST for their comments. And then the last one is purely the applicant may voluntarily request to participate in the pre-application review process. So I don't think there's any authority to require that. I think I can speak for the Berks that if the Planning Commission feels strongly about that, I don't think we will challenge you or oppose you to do that. But we do feel that we're within our rights. We weren't required to go to PLUS. We didn't go to PLUS, and I think we've addressed the things that basically would come up in that process. These aren't things that we're not aware of, and I think we've pretty adequately addressed most of the issues that would come up, and I also think we all know pretty much some of the responses that would be received from PLUS.
Okay. Thank you. You mentioned that this site had all three of the level 4, level 3, and level 2. Can you show them?
Sure. This is just a copy of the state strategies map. And again, just for reference, red's level 1, orange is level 2, yellow's level 3, white's level 4. Let me just move up here. I'll submit this for the record, but this is the state strategies map. Again, we're out here in this area right here. And the best way to identify this little line right here, it is actually the road that goes to the Rogers property. Right, so that kind of gives you a sense of where this is. So our property comes up in here, like a foot, like a move, comes up in here and then goes out this way. And there's the Broadkill River there. So a portion of this property is in the orange, a portion of the property is in the yellow, and a portion of the property is in the white. And again, on this scale, it's really impossible to identify exactly what, but it seems pretty clear, again, that it hits all three of those designated categories.
Okay. Thanks again. This application was approved in March. What was the number of lots that were approved in 2008?
The plot that was submitted, as I understand it, there were four lots. Is that correct? Four lots. Three of them actually had frontage on Round Pole Bridge Road, and
that's 1, 2, 3, and then the lot back here, and then the cul-de-sac.
Wait, let me just.
Right, so the cul-de-sac would serve the one house.
Right. That cul-de-sac served that one lot back here, and the other three lots were at frontage right here. 1, 2, 3.
Was that recorded? If I may interrupt.
Is that recorded?
Yeah. It's. Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you. I can't say it's recorded. I didn't record it. This
is recorded. Book 119, page 200.
This is taken from the county maps.
So I'm just going to verify.
I assume this is the tax map. But our property is in blue on this map. And if you see there, you can see actually the cul-de-sac roads right on there. And then these three lots are located right down there.
That was not a public hearing, correct?
It was the other business item at one of the special meetings.
Okay. I wasn't involved in that, so I don't know. I think it was at a public meeting, but not at the public hearing, right? But it wasn't a
public hearing,
Mr. Burton, it was, but it was by, it was done according to the rules that govern of the four lots. There wasn't anything wrong with what was done. It was done the way that it was allowed to be done. So it was
okay. I think the technical difference is it wasn't a major subdivision application. Exactly. It didn't have an application number. It was a minor subdivision that's done administratively during a public meeting, but not following a public hearing. Right.
Okay. The book mentions 84% preservation of trees, and Mr. Couples mentioned 70. What will be the...
I'm going to refer that to Mr. Couples. Huh?
Correct number is 70. The book also mentions that there are no historical, natural or historical features. Is that the brick yard?
The brick yard, we talked about the brick yard, but we didn't see that. I mean, naturally, it would have, any place else, it would be a greenfield site.
Gary, come up, sweetie.
Yeah. Any place, Mr. Burton, any place else, that would have been a greenfield. We converted industrial site to residential.
Brownfield or greenfield?
Oh, brownfield, I'm sorry, yes.
More like a redfield.
And it is my understanding that there'll be no lots in the wetlands, state wetlands lines at all.
That's correct. And as I stated, there will be no, the buffer will not be within the lot lines. The 50-foot buffer will all be located and in effect will be separating the wetland line from the lot line.
By 50 feet?
By at least 50 feet.
And the railroad property that is on this property, or it is still owned by the railroad, or
it runs right along here, and that will remain open space here. I'm not sure how that evolved, but lots of times the rights of way were abandoned to adjacent property owners. As I understand it, the rails are all gone and everything. It's just the remnants of what would have been the railroad bed there. But that's not going to be disturbed. That's in just kind of open space area.
Okay, and the way the plan is designed is it is designed that the essentially the brick crater areas would become stormwater management ponds. Is that what the blue is on that?
Gary, do you want to just?
No, those areas, those blue areas on the plan, they just stay the way they are. All they are is wet areas. They have nothing. They're not tied to the stormwater management at all. We don't have a requirement to stormwater. We have a requirement to provide water quality treatment, but not storage. And so those ponds, as they exist today, they're going to continue to exist. We're not going to mess with them at all.
Okay, so that they'll just be part of the terrain.
They're part of the terrain outside. As you can see, I mean, there are some of them are even within the buffer, wetland buffer, but they are not wetlands. They're wet areas. Okay.
You mentioned that this is going to be upscale housing. Do you have any idea where that'll be? What kind of housing will be in this proposed development?
Burke, do you want to address that?
Well, we're
Mr. Burr, you have to come up front and give us your name, please.
My name is Sam Burke, and I'm one of the members of the HP Layton Partnership. HP was Halsted Patterson Layton. We're anticipating upscale housing. Let me give you a little bit of the background here. When we decided to do this, we were looking for a project that was going to be welcomed by the cadre of people who live on Round Pole Bridge Road and who frequently come to planning and zoning, enforce, and object to these applications. And they usually object because the projects are multi-housing, they're condominium, they're they try to developers try to jam more on a property than otherwise you could put on it. And so I was looking for a 3/4 to an acre lot development that we could put substantial houses on that will be that the people in the neighborhood would welcome. rather than duplexes and townhouses and RPCs and that kind of a project. I want to stay away from that. I want it to be clean, and I want it to be according to the law, and I want it to be nice. Okay. And I think the only other project that I've ever really had, two projects that I've ever had much to do with, were up at Broad Hill Beach, and they turned out to be very, very, very nice. And I would expect this to be the same way. The gated community at the north end of Broad Hill Beach and the south end of Broad Hill Beach. I would expect that kind of property.
Thank you. And one last question in attention to the old brick houses. You made a comment that you were going to fence them in. Is that
the ruins?
Yes.
Not chain link fence. Okay. Some type of attractive wrought iron fencing or something like that. In other words, these are ruins. They're not stable. It's certainly not something that you'd want people climbing over. I mean, the bricks would collapse, roofs have collapsed there, things of that. So subject to any archaeological study that, as I said, the county or state might want to do, the intention would be to stabilize them so nothing's going to fall or something like that, and then place, wrought iron-type fencing, 6-foot fencing or something like that around it with a gate that would remain closed to preserve the site in its condition, cleaned up for safety, and leave it there so the remnants would be there and maintain the historical significance of it.
Thank you. No further questions at this time.
All right, sir. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, I'd like to preface my comments by thanking you for the 50-foot buffers that you're proffering on all the wetlands. I know that's been a point of contention that we've had from time to time. And having said that, I'd like to add my analogy to your 50-mile-an-hour speed limit, which is, it's permitted by law, but if it's snowing, do you still go 50 miles an hour? Perhaps not. So in the preservation of wetlands, even though it's not on the books that says that you have to do it, I appreciate what you're proffering today. And having said that, since we do have a wetland specialist, for the benefit of the commission and perhaps more so myself, would he be available to briefly summarize the difference between federal wetlands and the state wetlands and why there's a reason for buffers for one but not another?
Mr. Johnson, he's being paid, so I think it would be good to have him do something for it. So.
Edward Linnae from Environmental Resources, and we do a variety of environmental consulting tasks and do quite a bit of work in Sussex County. The state-regulated wetlands, this site is a little bit unique in that when the state law was enacted protecting wetlands, those wetlands really are largely tidally flowed, what we perceive as kind of more like a marshland. And in places where the Broad Hill River, is tidal, but as it is still tidal and gets closer, as it extends to Milton, it really becomes kind of a freshwater tidal situation. And as that happens, we get a little bit more of a unique circumstance where we have almost a situation where you have tidally flowed or tidally influenced woodlands. And that's kind of the circumstance here, that we have some a much wetter type of wooded environment and a somewhat tidally influenced environment on the green areas of the map. And those green areas are, as you can see, associated with the Broad Hill River up above. And then there's that's a stream corridor. And there are wetlands on the other side. This is the Nature Conservancy property. And actually, this is the state tidal wetland boundary on the opposite side. And the boundaries of state wetlands are promulgated on maps that have been developed by the state, where they've looked at certain freshwater wetlands and, again, certain tidal wetlands. And then through the county code, there's not a state, there's not any buffer requirement from wetlands and state law, but there, and to do work or to disturb those state wetlands, a permit's required, but there isn't a buffer requirement. The county code requires a 50-foot buffer from state-regulated wetlands, and also there's a 50-foot buffer from any type of a perennial stream. And we are providing on this plan a perennial buffer from, and we've actually submitted a delineation to the state, and the state representatives of the Wetlands and Subaqueous Lands Branch were out to the site, and they reviewed the property with me and agreed upon the limits of state subaqueous lands. So basically the limits of the underwater lands or places that would be streams or ponds, and there's a delineated 50-foot buffer around those as well. So that those buffers come as a result of the county code. The federal 404 wetland program, basically there's a manual that describes the soils and vegetation and hydrology characteristics of a wetland, and there's certain parameters in that manual that if met on each one of those parameters, if you meet these conditions, certain types of vegetation with a prevalence to occur in a wetland, hydrology where you have wet, ponded or saturated conditions to the soil surface for a good part of the growing season, those circumstances, then that's how the wetlands, based on those standards, that's how the wetlands get identified in the field. And then usually on a project like this, we would prepare a detailed report. It would have data sheets. There'd be a flagged wetland boundary that would be surveyed. It'd be placed on a plan, and we submit that report to the Corps of Engineers. They make a review, and that's where we are with them now. We've submitted it. We've discussed it. It's under review, and I'm waiting to get a letter back from them approving the boundary. But the boundaries on this site, because of the topography on the site, the wetland areas, the state wetland areas, are pretty much in very well-defined geographic positions. There's, you know, steep slopes or pretty pronounced slopes as you come up to the wetland. So some sites are broad and flat, and it's kind of become sometimes difficult to identify the boundary between the wetlands and uplands. On this particular site, it's pretty straightforward. I have my personal feelings about buffers, and my personal feelings wouldn't necessarily make some regulators happy, and my personal feelings probably wouldn't make the development community exactly happy. My personal feeling on the wetland buffer is that when I started doing environmental consulting work, people looked at farm fields and buffers and whatever, and the statement was that if we could just get a 25-foot grass strip between a ditch and a farm field, you know, we would cure 80% of our problems. And my personal belief is there's a lot of truth in that statement.
Mr. Chairman,
buffers.
I understand. 10 seconds.
Okay. So there's a lot of other different states. In Maryland, perhaps there's a 25-foot buffer from non-tidal wetlands. My personal view is that's insufficient. I personally think a buffer of 30 to 35 feet,
that's
30
10.
To 50 feet would be appropriate.
All right.
Thanks.
You got it in.
I have another follow-up question, Mr.
That's
Chairman.
That's fine. No, go ahead. You're not done. You're just done telling us about the buffers. Because I'm about buffered out, to tell you the truth.
I understand.
It's not, you know, it's. But go ahead, Mr. Johnson. Do you have the floor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just make sure it pertains to that drawing up there.
And it does.
All right.
And it pertains to the two different kinds of wetlands, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And it does pertain to buffers.
Okay.
So, but may the response be brief.
On this project, yes.
And I realize that you're all providing a buffer from all the wetlands, which, again, I greatly appreciate, but why would you not want a buffer from four wetlands when, even though there's not a code that says you have to? Is there some value in protecting those?
Yeah, I think there's a great value in providing a buffer from the non-tidal wetlands as well. And I'd be happy to see the county have an ordinance, or I'd be happy to see the state have an ordinance. And, you know, I again, we're it's distances. So the bigger you make a buffer, people might like it. But the most effective buffer is kind of in a shorter. That's where you get the most bang for the buck. Right. So it's a balancing situation.
And I've read the studies that says a variable buffer can work just
I'll
as
tell
effective
you what,
as a.
You guys save this for the public hearing on that ordinance. Okay.
Okay.
Right now, all right. The subject is.
Thank you,
this,
Mr. Chairman.
This one here.
If I may, I have a couple other questions that are not related to buffers, not related to wetlands.
As long as they pertain to this.
They do.
I don't have to be anywhere until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
And, Mr. Fuqua, you probably covered this, and I may have missed it, or Mr. Couples, but the clay pits that currently exist, are they going to be left in as they are? Are there intention to fill those, or what's the... And again, like I say, you probably addressed it, and I might have missed it.
I think the intention is pretty much leave them the way they are. I can't say there might not be a location where something would be rearranged, but I think they're pretty much left that way.
Can I answer?
Yeah.
The blue areas here were clay pits. It's on your plan. If you look at the topography, and we talked about this previously, you see areas that undulate back through here, and what they did is they just simply reached in and pulled the clay out, and they left like little islands. We're going to try to unify that with grading because that's sort of an unsafe condition. Some of them are relatively deep, maybe 8-9 feet deep, but the places where they pulled the clay out. But the clay pits that are here, we're leaving alone. We're having.
Okay. Thank you. Going back to your. Considerations of subdivision ordinance 99-9C. One of the statements in there, now I refer to number 5 under minimization of tree vegetation. You talk about that your plan allows for preservation of over 84% of the existing woodlands.
That's incorrect, Mr. Burton asked for that. It's 70%.
Okay, because I know when I just did the simple calculations of the roads and the sidewalks that represented about 20% of the land, let alone, you know, the clearing for the trees. So perhaps 70% might be even a bit generous.
Yeah,
that.
Mr. Burton had asked that same question.
I asked it differently.
I yes, probably distracted you, Mr. Johnson.
Oh, you probably did. And you pointed out earlier, I guess the Nature Conservancy is butts up to your property.
Nature Conservancy is on the other side between the river and the road here, which is basically separated by the wetland areas, which again runs on their property also.
Has there been any discussion with the Nature Conservancy about their perhaps purchasing this parcel?
There's certainly. Welcome to contact us.
But I'm saying there's not been.
No. I'd say that. Mr. Burke should address that.
Yeah. We've our family, the Leightons, have been active with the Nature Conservancy on other projects, and we stay in contact with each other. The question was, have we talked to the Nature Conservancy about this particular parcel?
Yes.
Ever so briefly. Do we intend to do more talking? We've agreed to do more talking.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome, sir.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions. Mr. Couples, you indicated that you said we did an area-wide traffic study. I just wanted for my notes, was that ECI or did you use another firm?
That's the information that's in the packet from Traffic Planning and Design. That's a firm that specializes in traffic studies.
Thank you.
Which was the study that the state was supposed to have done a year ago.
Yes. Mr. Burke gave us the answer that the type of homes he anticipates were to be at scale. Are there any other amenities planned for this community other than the pier?
Yes. We have a tot lot proposed for right down.
Uh,
right here, right at the entrance is the top lot. And there's open areas that include the areas around the most significant ruins, which is the two structures, the house structures that are in that packet information you have.
Mm-hmm. It's intended that area would be a park-like area with where the tot lot would be, those where the ruins are located, and there would be gathering area benches, things of that nature.
And some of the other typical questions that we ask is the provision made for a school bus stop if this development is
There's appropriate location for it that would be coordinated with the school district, with the Henlopen School District.
And your thoughts on this development insofar as sidewalks and street lamps?
The sidewalks on one side of the street, and I think Gary Couples had stated earlier there would probably be 8 street lights that would be located mainly at intersection type points where the turnarounds were. They would be directed down, you know, inward, not off the site.
And I'm guessing, because I've attended quite a few of these public hearings, that since you are the downstream parcel, as you said, you are responsible for water quality. You do not have to retain the stormwater on the site. Is it your job to get rid of the water as quick as possible?
It's our responsibility to not discharge polluted stormwater. We've got the stormwater that leaves the site has got to meet certain water quality standards promulgated by the state of Delaware.
Okay. All right. And how do you accomplish that?
Through bioswales. There's all sorts of green technology that will be incorporated into this plan. And what that really basically does is it takes the oil and grit, some of the pollutants outside that you would collect in a street environment, and captures them before they get to the stream.
Mm-hmm. Any of the stormwater that would run off, that may or may not run off from adjacent adjoining parcels, the roadway that comes through your property and your proposed project, then do you inherit that water? I mean,
our responsibility is that no more stormwater leave the site than what currently leaves the site now. So we can't discharge any more stormwater than what's being discharged at this point. That's the requirement. So we have got to address retaining that water, although not storing. So we have to clean it up, and then we can discharge it. You're discharging to a tidal basin, to Broadkill River.
And if I lived in the area and I were experiencing problems with runoff, maybe slow runoff or throttled ditches, culverts, etc., would I be concerned about your development further impacting those problems?
No, because I think you are correct. We're at the bottom of the drainage basin. We're the one that's right next to the river. We can't, under law, inhibit the current stormwater flow as it enters this site and exits. We can't, for example, create a dike around our project to cut off stormwater drainage from anybody else. We can't do that. State law won't allow us to do that.
So do you accept that water that may be running?
We accept that water. That water is there now.
Running through.
Whatever's running through there now, it's going to continue to run. We have no way at all of restricting the offsite by law.
And then another fairly typical question, your homeowners association then would be accepting into the budgeting for the maintenance and the care
of the stormwater,
stormwater management, as well as the amenities, the
roadways, the rec facilities, maintaining any type of stormwater management,
yes,
things like that, which are normal things, of course.
Probably also contain hunting activities nearby, notice farming activities nearby.
Again, which are kind of normal, the agricultural notice, of course,
yep,
is required, and I know you often suggest a hunting, similar hunting type of disclosure, if appropriate.
I want to get some of these things on the record. And that's all the question I have for now. Thank you,
sir. Thank you, Mr. Ross.
Yes. In the case that we were to act favorably on the application, the access to Mr. Rogers's property during the construction and all, how will that be handled? So if emergency equipment needed to get through their personal access in and out, there's a couple homes back there, I think. How can you give assurances that that will be accommodated for?
Yeah, and it's not something I'm familiar with how that would be done, but either it would have to be done because that is the only access to that property. So I certainly can represent that there would be no intention not to provide that. And if that involved placing a temporary entrance while the actual paving work was being done, then that's what would have to be done.
Okay. And at the up near the top half of Clay Pit Drive, there's a stub road that runs back towards the Rogers property. What's the purpose of that stub road?
It's a turnaround on the cul-de-sac, and it's just there if future access was ever warranted.
Or desired?
Yeah, but mainly it's a turnaround.
But it stops at the 30-foot buffer, I noticed, so it's not really stubbed up to the property line, so I'm just, it's a different turnaround.
In this case, with the cul-de-sac, it's a turnaround, but it could be utilized as a connection, again, if and when that was ever determined, which, again, is often suggested by DelDOT and the county.
Okay. The four-lot previous subdivision that was done, were there any stipulations that you were aware of on that when that was approved?
I don't believe so. I don't think so.
The lots themselves, those clay pits, some are reasonably deep, at least for people in Sussex County that are used to stone dead flat. The lot lines are in some of those previously excavated areas, or some of the lot lines not in, or how are they laid? It's hard to understand.
If you look at the color exhibit, which is the, it should have a 11 by 17. Some of the lot lines are in the wet areas where the clay pits were. We're not doing anything. There are areas where, along here, where that the terrain undulates. We're gonna drain them out where they're significant. We'll make that one grade through there to avoid any safety issues. And there are perhaps 10 areas where they just simply reached into the embankment and pulled it out. So we're gonna grade that closed with the surrounding.
So I want to make sure I understand that those lots where the lot lines fall into those sloped areas, severely sloping areas, will be brought to grade with the rest of the lot.
That's correct.
And I guess they'll be stabilized somehow so that they don't
be stabilized in accordance with the conservation district.
And I presume that there won't be buildings in those graded areas, or will it be stabilized to a point where they could put foundations?
Well, actually, in some areas, you could have walkouts. You the soils here would allow walkout basements. So you could conceivably have a walkout basement here. There's pretty significant embankment there, scarring.
So some filling of those clay pits would occur to a degree.
I don't know if you want to call them clay pits, but clay areas, because the pits would be something that is surrounded, or like this over here, this is a clay pit. But these areas here were just like U-shaped channels. They reached in, pulled the clay out, knocked it open.
Okay. Gotcha. One of the provisions in code is section 9916 refers to unusual topography and safety situations. And this is why I was asking the questions about, you know, how the houses, the lot lines went up to the pits and that sort of thing. And I think this needs to be clearly delineated so that we know that we're in conformance with 9916. This may be a basis for the commission, in my opinion, to refer to PLUS, because in that particular article of code, it talks about cooperating with state on safety issues that are in unusual circumstance. in my view, this may fall into that category. It's something I think we'll have to think about. Hopefully after tonight, I can't see us making a decision tonight. I won't vote for a decision tonight, notwithstanding not hearing the public hearing, because I would need to research this section.
And Mr.
Have you looked at this yourself, Mr. Fuqua?
Yes. I wanted to make it clear that, as I understand the statute, this is not required, and there's no provision to require it to go to plus. But as I stated, if the commission wants to refer to plus, we have no objection to that, and we will voluntarily agree that it could be referred to plus.
I don't know it's so much a thing about just going to plus, but this particular article of code refers to these unusual circumstances and the safety prerogative of the commission.
Going back to a point you made earlier, we're pretty used to dealing with flat. That's Sussex County. That's almost what we always deal with. But, you know, when you're in Newcastle County or other places in the state of Delaware, having a slope is not an unusual situation. I mean, it might be unusual to Sussex, but it's not something that isn't dealt with in, you know, most of the country, quite frankly.
I think maybe I wanted to add, you know, these clay pits have been abandoned since 1928 or even earlier, whenever they, so there's been some significant closure of these areas. It's pretty minimal, but the topography clearly shows where they reached any ground. It's not unusual at all. It's, quite frankly, you see it all the time in areas of gravel pits, whether it was they were mining gravel or they were mining clay. Didn't make any difference. Reach in and grab it and then move on. So there's nothing unusual about it at all.
Okay, let me make sure I got all my questions here. Because my chicken scratch. I've grown chickens for all my life, and so I'm writing like a chicken anymore. I can't read my own notes. I did notice Mr. Burke mentioned that he was hopeful to have lots 3/4 to an acre, but if I read the site plan that we have in front of us tonight, they're roughly 20,000 square foot.
Yeah, and again, that was Sam's original thoughts. This, as I said, this is served by public sewer, so the 20,000, you know, roughly half acre size lots are permitted.
Understandable. Thank you. No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Lang?
One question. On the lots within 1,000 foot of the Broadkill River or its floodplain, what's the square footage?
I think 20,000, I would suspect.
And I ask that question because the ordinance, since this is a part of a conservation zone all the way back since 1988, if you have central sewer without central water, those lots in that 1,000-foot strip have to be at least an acre. If you have both central sewer and water, then you're not within, don't have that problem. Then you offered that it is central sewer, but individual wells. In the rest of the area, the issue, it could be with central sewer, could be a half acre or 20,000 square foot. But just
there,
within 1,000.
We have no lots in a subdivision that are over 27,000 square feet. So as far as the 1,000 foot, I'd have to take a look and see what that impact would be. Lots. And if it would be, then we would simply increase the lot size accordingly.
That's all I have.
Or provide central water.
Or provide central water.
Okay. All right. Mr. Abbott?
No questions.
Council?
No questions. Thanks.
Okay, gentlemen. Mr. Couples, I continue to be intrigued about your basement comments. I understand that there's enough terrain there, but if you're going to fill a certain amount of that, aren't you going to be excavating in an area that is known to have a significant amount of clay under it, and is that a good place to put a basement? Not that that's particularly relevant.
If you, again, we're going to get into soils.
More to the point, I guess. Have any soils tests been done at this point? Have you done any borings or anything? Do we really know what's
not
there?
Not at this juncture. We, as far as foundation design, we don't have a preliminary plan approval. So
yeah, no. I understand. I think some of the concern is that if the project does move forward and you have these areas of fill that exceed 18 or 24 inches, which they undoubtedly will, that there's some concern that some builder's going to go in there, put a standard foundation in, and then the back of the house is going to slide down the...
No, I don't think that would be the case. There is clay deposits here, and you would have to obviously look at the soil mechanics, but the fact that you expose, if you would have walkout basements along that escarpment, and that escarpment runs just about like this, right?
Okay.
Right through here.
Okay.
If you would have walkout basements, you could do that very readily.
Okay.
Not a problem.
All right, then. All right, gentlemen. We thank you. If you'll take a seat nearby.
Thank you.
I suspect that there might be one or two folks here with an interest in your application, and they've all been very patient, and we appreciate that. So, is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2009-10 HP Layton Partnership? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2009-10?